There's news today out of Egypt that a car bomb attack by suspected jihadists has killed at least 25 Egyptian soldiers at a checkpoint in Sinai. It's being called the deadliest attack in the region in months, and we'll continue to monitor developments there. But we want to talk now about terror closer to home. After those two attacks this week in Canada, the man who attacked Parliament in Ottawa was a Muslim convert, as was the man who ran down a Canadian soldier in an attack on Monday. Joining us via Skype is Wesley Ward, one of Canada's leading terrorism experts. He's a visiting professor at the University of Ottawa. And Professor, we called you there a terrorism expert. Did these attacks surprise you?
Absolutely. I mean, there's always been a problem in Canada since 9/11, and in the sense that, you know, we are aware that terrorism could occur in Canada, but we've enjoyed a run of good luck and good intelligence and law enforcement work in that since 9/11, we have foiled every known terrorist plot that's emerged in Canada. And I think that track record probably led to a belief on the part of many people, including myself, that the likelihood of domestic terrorism plots developing and being successful in terms of their execution was growing ever less likely. So certainly the first attack in Quebec, the murder of the military officer run over by a car, and then followed very, very shortly after by the attack in Ottawa. These twin surprises are absolutely surprises, and I don't think anybody could really stand before anyone and say, you know, we expected this to happen.
And what about the fact that both of these suspects in the attacks this week were recent converts to Islam?
Well, it's obviously a worrying trend for the security authorities. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a recent convert to Islam. The real problem is that with regard to these two individuals, not only were they recent converts, but they came to embrace a very extreme version of Islam and somehow were radicalized to violence, which is the big concern for security authorities. We've been developing programs in Canada to try and engage with the Muslim community on the part of the police force, the RCMP, and the intelligence service, CSIS, in order to be able to kind of monitor developments in those communities and gain their trust as well, and hopefully be able to sort of intersect with them as sources of information about developments. The RCMP, we know with regard to the Quebec convert, Couture Rouleau, were, you know, very close to him, had interviewed him and his family, his imam had intervened with him. In both cases, it draws attention to the kind of mysteries of how people who have converted to Islam come to embrace something well beyond that in terms of a turn to jihadist violence. It also raises questions about just how much did the security and intelligence agencies know about these people, and did they use the opportunities that they had to try and prevent these attacks to the extent that they could have in a democratic and legal setting?
And you say that there is no standard profile for somebody like this who could be a lone wolf terrorist, as we look not just in Canada for possible trouble ahead, but also in the United States. There's no profile we can look for?
And people have been searching for this profile, to be honest, since the 9/11 attacks. I don't think anyone would argue that there is a kind of scientific picture that can be used. There are a set of sort of general characteristics, but they're very loose and nonspecific. So, to a certain extent, this is a kind of necessary pursuit, trying to narrow that range of characteristics to a point where it might help in terms of investigations. But I think we also have to be realistic that you're not going to be able to identify suspects simply on the basis of some kind of profile about how individuals get radicalized. It depends on a kind of deeper intelligence and law enforcement work than that.
Do you think it's premature for people, including the Prime Minister of Canada, to connect these attacks to ISIS?
Well, the Prime Minister has made that connection in his first statement to the nation about the attack in Ottawa. There are elements of a connection, clearly, in terms of what we know about how Monsieur Couture Rouleau, who ran down the two military personnel, used social media and drew on clearly identifiable ISIL propaganda and media postings. Whether one can go so far as to say he was absolutely inspired by the ISIL idea, We perhaps don't have enough information, at least in the public domain, to say that. Perhaps the security authorities know more. We do know that, in terms of his connection to ISIL, that he had an intention to travel to Turkey and on from there to Syria, Iraq, apparently to join ISIL. And this is why, in fact, he was put on Canada's no-fly list and prevented from travel. So there are certainly elements of a connection. Whether the ISIL link was his first inspiration or his sole inspiration, we can't say, but there's enough there to indicate that the ISIL inspiration was significant, and it may well have played a part in the background to the Ottawa shooter's development as well.
So what can be done, Wesley Warke, about this? What can authorities do? And I should say, a lot of people look back at what was done after 9/11 and say the authorities went too far. Lawmakers gave them too much ability to spy on ordinary citizens who aren't doing anything wrong.
Yeah, I don't think that's the solution, to kind of extend the legal powers of security and intelligence agencies to a point where they begin to conflict with kind of democratic norms and civil rights expectations. I think, if we put this in context, there's been a faster identification of ISIL, if you like, as a global threat compared to the view of Al-Qaeda, for example, in the 1990s. There's going to have to be continued emphasis on the foreign fighter problem, and I think probably a return to emphasis on the homegrown terrorism threat, which had fallen down the rung of intelligence priorities as the ISIL problem began to dominate.
Wesley Warke, one of Canada's leading terrorism experts and a visiting professor at the University of Ottawa, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And we are also following news today out of New York that Craig Spencer, the doctor who treated Ebola patients in Guinea, has contracted the virus himself and is in isolation in New York City. Meanwhile, today, the Dallas nurse who treated the first patient diagnosed with Ebola in the U.S. is out of the hospital and being called Ebola-free. Nina Pham spoke today outside the National Institutes of Health, where she was being treated in a special isolation unit.
I join you in prayer now for the recovery of others, including my colleague and friend Amber Vinson and Dr. Craig Spencer. I hope that people understand that this illness and this whole experience has been very stressful and challenging for me and for my family. Although I no longer have Ebola, I know that it may be a while before I have my strength back.
And following that news conference, the White House announced it had invited Pham to the Oval Office this afternoon for a meeting with President Obama.